Fads come and go, and nowhere more than in the world of weight loss. That's why Noom's weight management programs are made to last. Noom uses science and personalization to help you manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up for your trial today.
And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bench with Bubba, episode 416, joined by a special guest returning to Bench with Bubba to talk about some early NFBC draft takeaways, some ADP debates and whatnot, because why not? It's almost Thanksgiving. We have so much going on drafting already. There's nine final drafts in ADP already. It's crazy. So we'll break it all down and much, much more. You can find him on Twitter at Pile of Dial, the NFBC veteran himself, NFC, NF, whatever basketball one you name him. He does it all. John Fish, how are we doing, man?
Good, Bubba. How are you tonight?
Good, good, good. How is it doing all these drafts while still managing your basketball and your football and your hockey teams?
It's very, very challenging. Yeah. Setting football lineups tonight. I'm scrambling, although pretty much all my football teams are done. I mean, I think I have one or two teams that are in any kind of contention. It's been an awful year for me. Thank God it's coming off a good baseball season. So not too much in the hole.
This football season, man, like I hate to say it, but it's a luck thing, but you've had to dodge so many bullets to survive this one. It's been a wild go, to say the least. That's what I'll say. It's like, it's not luck. You still don't know what you're doing, but it's been bonkers out there. So very, very tough to navigate those minefields. But we'll see how it finishes up. Technically, we're like barely halfway done. So, the season, you know, you got playoffs coming sooner for fantasy-wise, but we'll see where that goes. But baseball. How many drafts have you done so far?
Five completed drafts.
Nice.
Currently in six and seven at the same time here. So
yes, you're in one with me. My first one of the year, my official first one. I don't really count my FPAS one because it's in hiatus right now. We get to finish it in a while, so it's kind of paused. But this is the first go get them one. So it's been quite interesting already through three rounds. But I like the 1 hour clocks. I don't feel like we had 1 hour clocks last year. So it's a nice change of pace. But what are you seeing? Any big differences between your NFBC 50 12 teamers and your DC 15 teamers so far?
Well, I've unfortunately had late picks in every draft so far. Like this draft we're in right now in this 50 is I have pick six, and that's the earliest pick I've had so far, which is really unfortunate because I actually really, really like the early picks this right now, where we're at in draft season right now, the way things are kind of shaping up. I really like those first four picks. But yeah, as far as like what I'm seeing, like, I mean, obviously we're seeing closers go, the top two closers are going in the 15 teams. We've seen them go in the second and third round, which is, I get it. It's pushed up. You know, what do we have, like 7, 8 sure closers at the moment. So
yeah, it's rough.
Yeah, in a drafted hold, like you know, you got to have your saves. So I definitely understand why people are, jumping the gun a little bit on that. It makes total sense.
Yeah, I just took a right before we recorded, maybe two picks ago in our 50 we're doing right now, 12 teamer. I took Liam Hendricks in the third round, eighth pick in the third round. Something we were talking about before the show that I probably wouldn't do very often, but in a just draft and hold type format, I'm going to give it a whirl. That's part of the. It's part of the fun of these. Yes, there's a monetary prize, there's an overall prize, but it's also getting kind of a strategy down for go time later in the year. So we're going to see how this one plays out and go from there, because I still think Liam Hendricks is a beast and probably the best one in football. I mean, baseball. I'm watching football too. Baseball and trying to lock down those saves, hopefully, because the White Sox should be pretty darn good still from everything that we should expect. You mentioned, I know you were talking in the groups before we did our KDS, that you hadn't had a top pick yet. You want one of those top picks. You said you still, you know, you've been stuck in the middle to the back end so far. What would you potentially do differently if you had a top pick? Then, like, would it completely flip the way you draft, or is it just because you want, like, the Tatis, the Turner, one of those guys?
Yeah, I want speed in the first round, and I think, I mean, I have a pretty clear-cut top four, not in any particular order, but Trey Turner, Tatis, Bichette, and Jose Ramirez are my pretty clear top four. So the way things are shaping up right now, the way that I've seen things going so far, is I really, really like the pitchers in the third round. I think Giolito and Nola, I'm perfectly fine with either one of them as my ace. Nice. So like in 15 team leagues, you get that five category big bat and you can pair it with the third round pitcher, either one of those. And then you can kind of go any way you want with the second round pick. And that's what I really like the flexibility. I could take another hitter there. I could get more speed, you know, maybe if somebody like Starlin Marte is there, or I could double up and, you know, hit two pitchers right there in that turn, or I could go with one of the closers as well. So, you know, you get a five category bat, one of the elite closers and who I think is an ace between, you know, Giolito and Nola. I think that's a phenomenal start. So,
yeah, I don't blame you at all. I guess the one takeaway I had from the FPAS draft that we did, I think it was 30 or 27 rounds in or whatever, that starting pitching super deep. Like, you don't have to force it. I used to be I have to have, you know, X or Y right out the gate type thing. And I still want to have, like you want that ace, like a Gio or a Nola or something, like in the third or fourth round. You want that, but you're not having to force that, which is nice for once. So you can kind of play the game and build up. Because I think that, like, that mid-tier of pitching is so much larger this year, where it might be more volatile, but it's also could be much more successful and more, like, you know, flexible type thing while you're drafting. So I'm with you on getting those bats, because steals do, like, you can get late steals, but it usually hampers some other part of your roster. So you got to get those guys early. And when you started talking about those mid picks, like, I have the eighth pick in our 12 teamer, and it got to me, and I'm sitting there looking at all the bats that are available, and I'm just like, like, none of the guys I want right now have steals, unless I push Ozzy Albies all the way up into the eighth overall pick, which I just can't stomach. And then it's just, I'm just sitting there torn. So I took Corbin Burns. I'm like, okay, I like Corbin Burns. Don't get me wrong. But I feel like I was kind of forced into taking Corbin Burns or Garrett Cole or something, where I'd rather have gone somewhere else. I already understand what you're saying. And then I came back and I didn't take Ozzy Albies. I wanted to. You got him, so you're welcome. we go from there. Like, I just – just what John Fish needs, more help from me. But yeah, it's fun. That's what's the beauty of these early drafts, is kind of getting a feel. You said you've done, this is your sixth and seventh draft. Are you seeing yourself kind of keep a tight player pool, or are you spreading it out right now? At least the big guys up top, I should say. Because obviously when you get Slate, you get kind of different.
Yeah, I'm spreading out a little bit, I guess. I have been fortunate to get Jose Ramirez. Like, I got him at six in our draft right now, and I got him at seven in my last draft. So it's worked out as of right now. But, like, I mean, if my top four hitters are gone, then it's kind of, I'll take my ace. I got no problem doing that. Kind of like what you just did with Corbin Burns. But then I'm almost like forced into taking certain players, like certain stolen base guys, in the second and third round, which is fine. Like, I have no problem with those guys, but, you know, like your Starlin Marte, Albies, you know, I've missed out on Luis Robert everywhere so far. Obviously we're very early in draft season, so I'm sure I'll get a few shares here and there. He's somebody I'm definitely targeting, but I don't have any shares of him yet. As far as like my first round pick, I haven't really diversified too much, just because I have been able to get Jose Ramirez in a couple spots. And then I did get Corbin Burns and Cole. I did take two shares of Mookie Betts with my first two drafts, and I'm a little bit nervous about it.
It's an uneasy pick. I did the same thing in FPAS. I think I was ninth overall out of 15 as a DC, and I took Betts. And immediately, like, two picks, like, two drafters, like not two, my two picks, literally two picks later, pick 11. I'm sitting there going, I should have taken Kyle Tucker. Like it, to me, because they're very similar, but one's younger, obviously, and we know Tucker's going to run. We don't know what's with Mookie's hip. Like we've known more since then, and it still kind of doesn't make me feel easy saying, oh, I'll just rehab it and we'll be okay. Yeah. So I know exactly the thought process. I passed on him in our draft. I looked at him twice. I'm just like, I'm good. I got my one share, I think.
I mean, he's going to be a massive steal down there if he's healthy. But if he's not healthy, it's going to be, I mean, it could basically ruin your draft. Yeah. So I'm backing off him a little bit after those first two drafts. So.
Yeah, and I'm already seeing Kyle Tucker's moving up more, so I think that's going to be a common theme is those guys are going to kind of pass each other in the night, and then we'll see if maybe Betts kind of with Lubob, they kind of start hanging out together. That'll be an interesting point there too, because like one, you're going to probably, you're most more than likely going to get much better batting average from Mookie Betts, but you might get a little speed over here. So it's going to be interesting to see how that one plays out as well. I love J-Ram. I'm 100% with you. I would love him more than anything in the world right now because he's just third base is what it is. That's why I took Devers in round two. No steals, but it is what it is. Mm-hmm. J-Ram's just awesome. Absolutely amazing. So,
yeah, I would take J-Ram as high as number two, I think. I'm a Trey Turner number one overall guy. Yep. And then, I would go J-Ram probably two. I'd probably go Bichette three, and then I'd probably go Tatis four. Just a little bit of an injury concern for me with Tatis.
Okay, well, we're going to jump around the outline then because you've mentioned Bichette a few times, and I'm really curious because I love Bo Bichette. Love Bo Bichette. And I was big Team Bo Bichette last year, and anybody that listens to me and Toby, Toby was not Team Bo Bichette because he's afraid of the speed. And so that was one of the ones we kind of go back and forth on, and it was more just me saying, I believe he's young and going to do it. I guess it's just what it's going to be. And if it happened, do I get them all right? Not a chance. But this one worked out well. And I'm pumped on him. Like last year, the big debate was like, was he worth a second or a third round pick? And it proved it. Yeah, pretty much he was. Well, I knew he would have a good chance to jump in the first round. Seeing he's already got like an ADP of 5, and you're saying you take him as high as 3, and I know you're not alone on that. What are your expectations for Bichette this year? Because when you look at like the Steamer projections, and obviously they're not the end-all be-all by any means, and they're usually much more kind of tempered, but they have him for 28 homers, 18 steals, 101, 95, 292, which is outstanding. That is a phenomenal five-category line. But what are you thinking from him? Because you mentioned, you got Tatis there, you got Turner, you got J-Ram, you got Bichette. That's your big four. That's a heck of a big four to be with.
Yeah, I would expect something very similar to what he just did this previous year. Okay. Five category production. You might not get five category production from J-Ram because the average is a little bit worrisome, but you're going to get a little bit more power and speed. With Bo, I think you're looking at pretty much the same line as he just did. I think he's going to hit 290 to 300, 100, 100. And I think, probably 20, 25 home runs and 15 to 20 steals. I think that's what my expectation would be.
Yeah. So you're in line with Steamer. Like last year, you had 29 homers, 25 steals. It's like, if he has one, like a hot, like couple weeks, he could be 30-30. Like that's monstrous stuff. That's game changing stuff. And I guess that's why you take the gamble on him there. So, like, I'm not against the pick. I was just surprised to see him go that high right out the gate. Like, boom, people are making their statements right away with him. Like, it's great to see Turner because for years there's been guys like me, you, I know Dave McDonald and a few others that were always been Trey Turner, but I've had people fight back with me on, like, no, he can't do this, he can't do that. And, well, he's proved everybody wrong so far, and now everyone's starting to draft him number one for obvious reasons. And to see Bo move up there too is pretty sweet. I want to ask you about another guy that I know you like quite a bit, at least last year. Jazz Chisholm was your dude. And I just want to bring this up because it was a discussion point with me and good old Kurland the other day. And he's up to an ADP of like 73, give or take, right now. And we know what Jazz Chisholm can do is he can run. He can do it all, basically. And a little bit of power, but the average is a concern, to say the least. Last year, he hit 18 homers, stole 23 bags, and only 124 games while hitting 248. So what are you thinking with the guy like Jazz Chisholm? Because, like, yes, the swing and miss is a concern, but let's say he plays another 25 games. Are we still believing in the power-speed combo? Like, what's your thoughts on him?
Yes, I definitely believe in the power-speed. The batting average is definitely a concern. And I think, he's still young. So, he's got plenty of room for improvement still. And I think he will improve. I would not expect too high of a batting average, maybe 260, 265 for this year. But if you're looking at the landscape now in fantasy baseball, batting average, that's 260, 265, that's pretty much 80th percentile these days. So while it is a little bit of a concern, it's not, he's not 200 to 220 batting average. So I don't, he's not going to kill you in batting average. I do like the dual eligibility. I probably can't expect much in RBI department. I probably wouldn't expect 100 runs either, just because that lineup is not exactly the greatest lineup in baseball. But I would definitely expect the power and speed to continue. So I think he's definitely worth the pick there at that ADP, especially if you didn't address stolen bases early on.
Bingo.
That's the key right there. If you did not address stolen bases, you got to get him somewhere. So why not get him with a guy who's going to give you a little bit of power and dual eligibility?
Yeah, the way I look at him, and I might be overzealous because I love Jazz Chisholm. I wasn't on him as hard as you were last year, but I definitely had a few places I got him, and where I got him, he helped me finish very well for what he did, even though he didn't play that often. I think he's a Bobichet light, basically. He's not going to get the batting average, but I think that power speed he brings to your lineup, legit 2020 type stuff, I think is tremendous, especially where you're getting him in the draft. So my question for you, just for fun, from the hip here, at the shortstop position, he's the 12th shortstop off the board right now. Would you take him over Francisco Lindor?
Oh, that's tough. Well, as many times as Lindor has screwed me over, straight up, I probably would not.
We're going 30 picks apart right now. Yeah,
straight up, I probably would not, just because I think Lindor's counting stats are going to be far superior. I think their home runs are going to be pretty similar, and I actually think Jazz will have more steals than him.
Agreed. The next guy, we don't know where he's going to be playing yet next year, but what about Jazz and the 10th shortstop, Corey Seager?
That's going to come down to completely the team need. If you need stolen bases, obviously it's going to be Jazz. But if you've addressed stolen bases early, like I usually like to do, Corey Seager's the pick. I think he's going to be an elite four category bat no matter where he goes.
Yeah, that's going to be a fun one. So, yeah, it's just I guess it also shows how deep shortstop is, that Jazz, it can be the 12th shortstop and still be so darn good, but still keep it quite interesting at the same time. So, be a fun one to monitor. Well, and he will be back on the agenda here a little later to talk about some ADP talk. But I figured I've always compared him to Bobichet light. Obviously, Bobichet's much better, but I feel like if you're good and bad on average, you can get some interesting production that might be, I don't know, something. Maybe what we thought we were going to get with Bichette last year, which he had exceeded, like that could be what Chisholm could do this year type thing. So let's see how that goes. Let's talk about some early ADP standouts. We talked about Bichette already. Let's talk Shohei Ohtani, because this is one I can't pull the trigger on. Like, obviously, on Thursday, as we record, he won the AL MVP unanimously, deservedly so. But he's pitcher or utility. You have to put him in one position. And if you put him at pitcher, you obviously can't change him out at the end of the week like you can a hitter. He's going around pick 8 or 9 right now. And I just can't bring myself to do it, because talk about paying for a guy at his peak. But I might be wrong. So what's your thoughts on Ohtani going this high?
Yeah, I'm probably not going to have any shares of Ohtani. In my opinion, he's far more valuable as a hitter. And I'm just not interested in filling my utility in the first round. Like, that is just, it's just a recipe for disaster as you progress through the draft. You can't take, let's say you take second and short, and then all of a sudden you got a middle infielder that you really like. So you take that. And then now you can't take another middle infielder, even no matter how far somebody falls, because you got your utility filled. You're probably not going to use Ohtani as much as a pitcher, especially if they're sticking with the one start a week. It's pretty tough to use him as a pitcher. I'm probably going elsewhere in the first round.
Yeah, no, that's the part I can't stomach. Like, I get certain arguments, but, and there's just so much injury risk with a guy doing both things at all times. I'm just terrified of that kind of situation. So yep. Taking a guy that early, you got to basically have a lot more confidence. At least I need to take a guy like that. Prove me wrong. That's fine. But that's one of those I'll be willing to be wrong on type situations.
Yeah, the thing is with drafts, like, you can miss out on a breakout player. I could miss out on the biggest breakout player in baseball across all my drafts and still do just fine. It's it's how you build your entire team. So
that's the beauty of baseball, is it is an entire team, as you said. Unlike football, like in the old days, if you had LaDainian Tomlinson, well, you won the league. So congratulations. This is a whole different animal, and it's so much longer, where there's so many IL stents and fab things. And yeah, this just gets you the base. Like, unless you run pure as pure can be, like the genius robot Phil Dussault did, who literally like avoided every landmine on the planet, but he also drafted the amazing breakout guys. Like, he just did checked every single possible box you can imagine, and he kicked everybody's butt. So it was pretty darn impressive.
But I think even he didn't have any Vlad Jr. last year.
No.
So
his big things was he nailed his closers, even in the DC, like you mentioned, so he didn't have to be chasing. He wasn't chasing saves. Mm-hmm. And then he had the DeGroms, but then he had Robbie Ray late. He had Rodon late. He had all those late starters that just Logan Webb just elevated him through the roof. So you don't have to worry about anything in that regard. That's clutch. It's huge.
Yep, absolutely.
I would love to have that happen one time in my life too. Like, that would be amazing. But there's always some road bump in every league we're in, which is how it goes, it feels like.
Yep.
The next guy I wanted to bring up, and this is more because I expected Jordan Alvarez to go higher in drafts. I was kind of surprised by this. He's when I made this last night, he's going around pick 39. He's already bumped up one since they've added two more drafts to the ADP. So he's going around pick 38 overall. So maybe he'll slowly keep climbing and make a little more sense to me. But I get he gets no speed, and there was injury concerns, but in the end last year, he still played 144 games, hit 277 with 33 bombs. Like, he's a four-category beast. He's what JD Martinez used to be, and JD used to go in round two. So that's why it stood out to me that he's going basically late round three. Maybe he'll fall around four. Maybe he'll creep up. I don't know. Where do you see Jordan Alvarez becoming worth the price of admission, basically?
Well, I actually just took him in at pick 40. He doesn't fit my mold that I like to, the way I like to draft. Yes, my aces and bases.
Dude, okay, you said that is amazing, by the way. I heard someone on his Rob show, there needs to be shirts or something. I'll buy one now, because that's how I draft. Like, I want X amount of stolen bases early. Like, and I want my, like I said earlier, you don't have to force the starters anymore, but you still want them. So you need the aces. Like, phenomenal. That's all I gotta say. So as you were.
Yeah. Yeah. So I took him at pick 40, and this was after pocket aces. So I'm really setting myself back in stolen bases, which is just something I don't ever want to do. But when I looked at it, like looked at the way the draft fell. So I went Burns, Wheeler as my pocket aces. And before my next pick, Mullins, Marte, Witt, Tim Anderson, and then Teoscar Hernandez, who was my target, actually got sniped, taking the pick before me. So I'm looking at it, and I'm like, okay, so I could take either like Trevor Story, Mondesi, who I'm just not really interested in the third round, like Tyler O'Neill, Rosarena. Like, those are kind of my stolen base options, right? So I'm looking at it, I'm like, all right, I'm not going to force the issue here. So let me get the big four category back, because I do think he's going to be a monster four category bat. I mean, like you said, we just saw it this past season, and their Houston lineup's going to be loaded again. So
yeah, that's,
I went Jordan. And then I went Story next.
Okay. That's an interesting one. I get it.
Yeah. I'm not super high on him, but again, like, I'm so far behind on stolen bases. I figure wherever he's going to go, I think he can get at least 20 stolen bases.
Yep. That's the thing. That's the thing with Story. Like, sure, the power might disappear, but no matter where he goes, he should still run. Mm-hmm. So like, and literally we just talked about a guy like, go at Story now, and then next round or the round after, just maybe jump and get Chisholm, and you're going to have 40 or 50 steals before you know it. But
yeah,
your outfield becomes an interesting situation, because that's always a conundrum in DCs, as we've talked about before. So yeah, it's such a puzzle to put together.
Well, yeah, it really is. And the good thing about Alvarez this year is he's actually outfield eligible. So that's, you know, true. Going into last year, he was UT only, and that was just really, really tough to take. And then, you know, he was coming off his two knee surgeries. So whoever did get him, and I don't think I had any shares last year, whoever did get him actually turned out to be a really good pick, because he gained outfield eligibility and he had a huge year. So
I took him in my very, very last draft because I was so anti-Jordan everywhere. But then, like, my last draft was like a FOMO draft. Okay, I took, like, this guy. So I took Jordan, and I'm like, well, that panned out for at least one draft because the rest of them was, like, that power alone. Because that was one of my biggest weaknesses last year is most of my power guys, like, all got hurt, it felt like. And it was just – it was – like, Christian Walker just couldn't hit the ball. And that was fun. So Jordan was, yeah, was big, big, big. Yeah. Speaking of Frenchie Lindor, I wanted to talk about him real quick because – he's going around pick 50, 52 right now, which for those of us that have played long enough know Lindor used to be an automatic first-round pick back in the day. And things have fallen tremendously because he had a rough, rough year in New York at 230, but still at 20 homers, still 10 bags. You have to imagine the power comes back because he's still super young. The speed, we'll see, should be decent. But I still think, like we kind of talked about him already, should be a very good contributor. Do you think 50-ish is the right range or should he be going maybe a little higher?
I think that's about the right range. I mean, he should be right in his prime, right? He's 28 years old.
Yep.
We've seen what he can do. He's going to be a second year in New York with his new team. The Mets got to be better offensively, you'd think.
Who knows?
Yeah. I think he's worth the draft pick right now. In the end of the third, early fourth round, I think he's definitely worth that price tag now. And again, he's going to be the power speed combo. How much speed he's going to bring, though, I don't really know. 125 games last year and only 10 steals. That kind of makes me a little bit nervous. I don't know if that's just a product of him not being able to get on base as much or what the deal is. I would like to see him get back to that 20 stolen base range.
Yeah, it would be nice to see him start running some more because that used to be the beauty of him in the first round. Now it's like J-Ram took that over from the old Cleveland team, and now there's all these other shortstops that are running wild. So it makes it interesting. You mentioned you took Trevor Story. He's going right around the same time, give or take. Would you rather have Story over Lindor, or is it strictly if I need steals, I want Story, otherwise I want Lindor?
I would rather Story than Lindor. Yeah.
I'm really curious on where Story's going to land because there's so many rumors. I'm like pretty darn positive though it ain't going to be Colorado though. So
yeah,
pick somewhere else,
which is fine. I mean, I think he needs to get out of there. I think that second half after, especially after he didn't get traded, I think he was just
nailing it in.
Yeah,
yep. I'm with you 100% on that one. Let's talk about Mr. Mondesi. Got to bring him up just because it's very interesting this year because you don't have to pay like a second round price tag anymore, which is nice. He's going around pick 50-ish, 52. He's got third base eligibility this year, which is a bit different as well. That kind of perks things up with as bad as third base can be. Mm-hmm. And we know he's one of those guys that doesn't have to play a full season. It'll still be a fantasy beast. And then you just replace him with someone else at third base. And they're not going to be against some production. Yeah, and you're out on Mondesi this year.
I actually did take one share of Mondesi already. I've always been out on him just because of that price tag. I mean, he's going to end of the first round, second round, third round. That's way too high of a price tag for me. He's just – obviously the injury issues are just, I mean, a glaring weakness for him. But he doesn't do like everything that I really liked. Like, he's never really hit for a good batting average. When he hit .276 back in 2018 – but it's been downhill since then, .263, .256, .230. I think he's properly priced now, though. Like, I would be willing to take a shot on him now. He, like you said, he is third base eligible. Third base is by far the weakest position, in my opinion. And I think he's priced properly now, where I think he's definitely going to be on a couple of my teams. I don't know. I'm not ever going to reach for him, though. It's going to have to be a situation where he kind of falls to me, which can definitely happen right now. So he's definitely a guy that I'm not completely crossing off my board like I have in years past.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at. Like, when he was a second-round player, I'm like, nope, not a chance. Not going to happen. But now it's like, okay, well, now we're talking fourth, fifth round. Usually there's always going to be someone in your draft that's going to want him more than you. So it'll be tough to have him fall, but some of the perks of draft early, like we're doing, is you might get that random fall, and that's where it can get fun. So I'm not going to say, no, I won't have any shares of Adalberto Mondesi, but it's much more intriguing this year as you said. So I'm curious to see where this goes and the conversations, at least in play this year. And just, you know, I think the beauty of these deeper leagues is also you can do a guy like that and go draft another third baseman a little earlier per se and play that game. Whereas like a redraft league, it might be tough to just stash a third baseman. So you might have to play the waiver wire if he gets hurt or something, but like on these deep leagues, you can go grab a guy and have him as like a corner infield slash I'm going to put him at third base option type thing. So yeah, there's definitely ways to build your lineups, make it work, which is very, very interesting.
And in draft champions, like if you're going to take a guy like Mondesi, kind of make sure that you get your bench filled with a couple good, decent third base options. Maybe somebody like Josh Harrison is eligible there, or Hunter Dozier, like guys that are probably going to play every day at least, get you, you know, when he does get hurt, then you replace him with a guy. At least you have, you know, a backup plan where he's a guy that's going to play every day.
Yep, 100% agree with you on that one. The last kind of ADP standout, I'm only going over the top 100 ADP because you can go deep, but one that stood out to me is Bobby Witt Jr. Like, we knew he destroyed AAA. We destroyed all the minor leagues, all of it. It was no issue for him. There was always the rumors like, oh, he's going to get called up, and he never got called up. So is what it is. But he's going around pick 75 to 80 right now. So people that want him are going and getting him. This could be a product of a draft and hold situation where you don't have to worry about the whole wait a month thing. You can just put him on your bench and then bring him in because you obviously can't add him once he's colors of Fabapalooza from Bobby Wood Jr. in these formats. Are you going after Bobby in these ones? Because, like, I don't mind taking chances on prospects, but for me, I've rarely taken him this early. He's a different specimen, but I'm curious on your thoughts on him.
Yeah, I've seen him go in the third round. I've seen him go in the fourth round. Way too early for me. No way I could do that. I did see him go, I think, in the seventh round of one of my leagues. It's a little more enticing there. It's probably still a little bit too early for me there as well. I'm seeing that. So he right now he's eligible at shortstop on NFBC. And I'm seeing that on one of the reports saying that he'll be given every opportunity to win the starting third base job. So that is, I don't know if that's accurate. I mean, but if it is, third and short eligible, I like that a lot. That also probably means that Mondesi might going to get some shortstop eligible at all as well. So I don't know. I have no idea what Kansas City's going to do. I'm probably at the current price tag, probably out on Witt. But yeah, I'm just going to need to see some more. If he falls to me eighth, ninth round, something like that, I'll probably jump in. But he definitely has the upside of a five category bat. But we have seen plenty of prospects come up and not perform. So,
Yeah, it's been a trend lately too. It's like it takes them a trip or two. Like it's not as often that they just come. But like Wander Franco, he got the job done last year. But he even had a little slow go early on. But they stuck with him and it worked. But, you know, we got the clinics. We've got so many guys that have been up and down, and like even Trevor Larnach, like I just think he's gonna be a good ball player, but last year wasn't great by any means. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to see. Like Bobby Witt's awesome, but like you said, if he plays third base, what's that do to Mondesi? Do they move Mondesi to shortstop? Then what's it do to Nicky Lopez or what? Like there's so many moving parts there. Like the Hunter Dozier thing, what's that do to Hunter Dozier? Like he's got third base eligibility, they can put him in the outfield or first base, but then there's just so many moving parts in Kansas City.
Yep, definitely is.
All right, let's talk about some ADP debates in these top 100 ADPs and have some fun with this. And we'll start in the outfield, the guy you mentioned earlier, Lou Bob, but we'll put Mike Trout, who's going, he's the 15th player off the board, going against Lou Bob, who's the 18th player off the board. Obviously, Trout's not running anymore, but if Trout can at least play 140 games, which is a big butt once in a while, still productive as all can be. But then you got Robert, who has been pretty darn awesome too. So what do you do with these two?
I would take Robert over him. I've always been kind of off of Trout just because, or not always, but the last couple of years, just because I don't think he runs anymore. I mean, why would you put him through any kind of injury risk anymore? Like he's already been nicked up. What is this? 4 years in a row. I think he's 30 now. I think the days of him running are done and it just doesn't fit what I like to do in those first couple of rounds. With my draft strategy where I want stolen bases and I want aces. So I would go with Robert.
Yeah, I'm kind of leaning there with you because I really like Trout, but the aces and bases, like you said, it's like, okay, I'll take Devers, I'll take the exception there. And there's a couple, like Harper still runs, you know, gets you 5 to 10 steals. Trout ain't running at all. It just ain't happening. So it's tough, and he doesn't play every day now, so I don't know what they're going to do with him. It could backfire tremendously, but because it is Mike Trout of all people, he can go hit 45 home runs and drive in 130 or whatever and prove me wrong, but I'm with you. I think I'll take the chance on Luis Robert, who going to be in that awesome lineup. The biggest thing with him that gets me tilted, and I hope it changes this year, is drunk Uncle Tony needs to make sure he's like leading off or hitting second every game. When they were batting in the back of the lineup, then back to the front, and then back in front, and just put him in front of Moncada and Abreu and Eloy. Let him feast. We'll see what Tony does. All right, yep. Another fun one here. We talk about getting those bases in the early rounds here. Two guys to take a look at: Starlin Marte, who big fan of. I know you mentioned him being a potential target as well. He's got around ADP of 25-ish right now. And then Cedric Mullins going two picks in front of him around 23. You know, Ced went 30-30 last year, which is absolutely outstanding. Tough to duplicate. But Marte's getting older too and didn't have a ton of power last year. So it's an interesting dynamic between the two. Who do you prefer in this debate?
Yeah, this is a good one. I prefer Marte. Just a little bit more of a track record. And I think the power is a little bit that's not going to happen again, I don't think, for Mullins. 30 home runs. I think we wouldn't be surprised if he hit like 10 home runs last year with 30 stolen bases. I think that would be easily well within his reach, but 30 home runs, that's pretty wild. Lineup isn't very good around him. I just don't think that power comes back. So I would definitely go with Marte, especially if he is going to sign in Houston, like some of these reports.
That would be pretty big if Marte signed in Houston. My goodness, that A, the rich get richer, and B, put him in that lineup hitting towards the top. Do and that fortune left, he could pop up. He'd probably get a handful more home runs pretty easily right there. We have to remember, a lot of his season was in Miami and Oakland. Doesn't bode well for your success in the power department. So
exactly. And one other thing on Mullins, he had 30 home runs and he only had 59 RBIs.
So he ain't driving guys in.
No, not leading. He's going to be a major negative in that RBI category, no matter what he does offensively. So,
and that's what sucks. Cause I like Mullins. Like, I believe he could get for a decent average. I believe he can steal bags. He can hit, 20, 25 home runs. But he's not going to drive anybody. And really, how much – I guess he'll score if he's on base because he got Trey Mancini and Mountcastle and stuff behind him. But the overall production, like if he goes 20-30 even, which is awesome, but you can get Randy Rosarena two rounds later or something and get something probably similar, like and make it a lot more interesting. So, or even Tyler O'Neill, who might have more power but less speed. So it'll be fun to see how that plays out.
Mullins is just a little bit he's just a little bit too high for me in the for the price tag right now.
And Starlin Marte is the proven commodity. There's something about those early picks, like it's fun taking the flashy new guy, but getting that kind of just locked in safer commodity per se is always a nice choice as well. All right, let's go to the middle infield now and talk about three guys. We got Marcus Semien going around pick 28, coming off his monstrous MVP candidate season, looking for a new home. You got Whit Merrifield, more power than people want to give him credit for, still running like crazy, going around pick 34. And then you got Tim Anderson, who everyone it feels like just kind of overlooks a lot, just does his thing. He kind of slides into the draft somewhere, hits for a good average, a little bit of pop, some speed, kind of hits you in all five categories. Not lighting the world on fire, but hits you in all five categories. So how do you go with Semien, Merrifield, Timmy Anderson?
I would definitely go with Tim Anderson over Whit Merrifield. And I don't really know on Semien. I had a couple shares last year, obviously enjoyed that. It was terrific. I don't know what I'm going to do with Semien. I would probably go Tim Anderson just because that White Sox lineup, I know where he's going to be hitting. I know what team he's going to be on. The White Sox lineup is loaded. He's proven that his what everybody gets all fired up about is walk rate. It doesn't matter. He's going to hit for a nice average. He's going to score a bunch of runs. He's going to, he's going to be a nice power speed combo. I get a little bit nervous about Tim Anderson. He's kind of been, gotten some injury issues over the last couple of years. Yeah. So he hasn't really played a full season. So I'm a little bit nervous about that, but I would go Tim Anderson out of that group.
That's kind of where I lean. And I think a lot of people are Marcus Semien fans right now. And I get it. He was awesome last year, like you said, but A, we don't know where he's going to play. And B, talk about drafting a guy at his peak. Like he did everything right. Like he's gonna still hit for average, probably a little bit of pop. I don't think he's gonna have a pop like that. And is he gonna steal that much? Potentially, we'll see. He's still young, but you're paying a premium for that season last year, and that's tough to stomach. I love Tim Anderson. I'm with you. I have Tim over the three. There is concern for sure. But I think if he starts the top of that White Sox lineup for like at least 130 games, which is a big if sometimes. That's a Beasley fantasy production coming your way, but it just goes to show you how deep the shortstop pool is. Like we've hit on, we've already gone through pick 36. And there's a ton. We got two more coming up here next. Like it's a very, very loaded situation right now.
Yeah, it really is.
And the next two we got up here is Xander Bogaerts going to pick 42, Wander Franco going to pick 46. And this is a fun one because you got Xander, who's literally steady Eddie. Like you know what you're going to get, good average. 20 to 25 home runs, maybe runs hot for a little like 30. He's going to get you five-ish steals, but he's going to count you runs, RBIs. You can just lock him in and just as long as he doesn't get hurt, he's good. No worries. Wander Franco, on the other hand, we've seen the highs and the lows, and I think we still haven't seen the highest of the high yet. And that's where it gets interesting. So do you take the steady Yeti and Bogaerts, or do you roll the dice on a Wander Franco who didn't really run much last year?
Bogaerts for me. I like that. I like that nice comfort, that safety in the first few rounds, and he definitely provides that. I mean, I think he's been the most steady shortstop over the last few years. So, I'm definitely going Bogaerts there.
Yep,
100%. I love the. I mean, I think we all love the Wander Franco, the upside, right? And maybe it comes this year, maybe it doesn't. I'm not ready to roll the dice and take him over somebody like Bogaerts quite yet. So yeah, it's definitely Bogaerts for me.
Yeah, it's like Bogaerts, you know what you're getting. There's no real questions involved there, but you got like Wander Franco. He played well, but 7 homers, 2 stolen bases in 70 games. Is that really gonna cut it for you? He's projected Steamers got him for 19 homers, 10 stolen bases. Like that's not really lighting the world on fire. Like, okay.
Right.
I talked about projections for someone else. Would you rather have Wander Franco or Jazz Chisholm? It's for fun.
Jazz.
And they're going like 35 picks apart. That's the beauty of it right there. Because we know what Jazz is going to do, in my opinion. And
yeah,
Wander's got such a weird difference going on.
Yeah, I mean, Wander stole 2 bases in 70 games. Yep. So maybe that 10 stolen bases that they're projected for, maybe that's even a little high. Give me Jazz. He's got that 30 stolen base upside with 20 home runs. And obviously you're going to give us some batting average with Jazz, but I'll take Jazz at that price easily before Wander at his price.
Yeah, no, this is going to be a team Jazz Chisholm podcast time and time again this year. It sounds like I'm just going to try to pump the narrative in there and just take Jazz Chisholm, everybody. Let's go to the outfield, though. Let's go to the outfield. Let's mix it up a little bit here. Randy Rosarena, rookie of the year, Randy Rosarena. We know he's got the 2020 ability, did it again this past year. He's going around pick 50-51. Got Tyler O'Neill, hit 34 home runs this last year, stole 15 bags, hit for a good average. Super young, the speed's ridiculous, the power he knows there, it all came together this year. We've seen Randy kind of do it for like a season and a half. We've seen Tyler do it for a season. They're going on like 2 picks apart. Who would you prefer?
Oh, this is the toughest one. I actually like both of them. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I'd maybe flip a coin on it. I'd probably go Tyler O'Neill. I think he's got a little bit more power upside. But yeah, it's very close for me. So
that makes me feel a lot better because literally you just got on the clock in our league. But that means I had to pick 2 picks ago, and I was debating between Randy Rosarena and Tyler O'Neill because I needed steals. And I thought about taking Randy because I think he gets more steals, but I took Tyler because I think the power and the speed, I can get some more speed a little later or whatever. I want to see what Tyler's got in him to crank it up a little more. Where Randy, even towards the end of last year, they were messing with his playing time in Tampa Bay. And that's a kind of concern to me, where Tyler, as long as he doesn't just fall off the face of the earth with his production, he's hitting like fifth at worst every day in the lineup. So that's another plus for me. We'll see.
Yeah. Yeah. That's it's very, very close for me between those two. I would be happy with either one of them, really.
Yeah. Well, technically I've done two drafts now. You got your boy Gio. Well done. Yeah. I've done two drafts now, technically, and I have one Rose Reina and one Tyler O'Neill share. So it's just pretty much, I think, the way it's going to go. There's a good chance I'll be targeting one of those two in most drafts round four-ish, give or take. So we'll see how that plays out. Back to Jazz Chisholm. People are going to hate me on this, but I said we would get to him later. Jazz Chisholm, a pick 74. He's second base shortstop eligible, so I put him up against another second baseman. Jose Altuve, a pick 78. Jose Altuve is not sexy, but, you know, you talk about steady Eddie Bogaerts at shortstop. Altuve is as steady as it comes. He's leading off for one of the best teams in all of baseball. Even if, and imagine, like you said, they get Starling Marte. My goodness. Not going to run much anymore, though. That's the biggest thing. So you got Chisholm or you got Marte? I mean, Chisholm or Altuve, sorry.
Yeah, I would probably go with Altuve here. Again, though, as long as I've addressed my stolen bases early, which I like to do, Altuve is the clear pick there between those two. Yeah, like you said, he's going to be Astros lineup. I mean, just look what he did last year. He had 117 runs, you know, 83 RBIs. His counting stats are going to be way higher than Jazz's. Yep. Batting average is going to be way higher. But, yeah, it's really just the stolen bases that are going to you know, favor Jazz. But
well, and if you're doing
Altuve for sure.
Well, if you're doing your aces and bases by this pick, you should hopefully have some stolen bases already, in theory, if things played out properly. So you're not relying on Altuve. And you mentioned those counting stats, the runs, even the RBIs, he'll get you probably 70-ish, 75, because he's going to – he hits like 20 to 5 home runs. Like, he's not a complete wash. I think he's a
steal. Yeah, 31 home runs last year and 83 RBIs.
I think he's a steal at this pick. Like, I thought he was a kind of a steal last year, and he got it done. I was shocked to see him at this ADP, to be totally honest, because, you know, the power, the overall production, he's a four-category guy. He's a second-base Jordan Alvarez. Like, he's not going to hit 55 home runs like Jordan, but for second-base production levels, he's a second-base Jordan Alvarez, and he's going up pick 76.
So, yeah, that's really, really crazy.
That's what's fun about looking at these ADPs, and super early, and it could be a lot of overreactions, whatever. But it stands out to be pretty, pretty interesting, to say the least. I'm just going to ask you a couple more guys here just to get questions out of you. Alex Bregman, he's a massive question mark right now. He's going to pick 90 so far in ADP, and we know he's battling injuries. He had that wrist surgery, you know, Nick Savale and Derek Rhodes, these guys that know injuries pretty well, said they wouldn't be as concerned with this one because of, like, they had a much better way of explaining it. Follow their Twitter. They'll help you out with that. But I trust those guys. That's what they do. He only had 12 homers last year, hit 270. I think the average will still be fine. Just does the power return? This could be one of those like the Altuve last year. Do you take the chance and it pays off great? Or is he not? What do you think? Are you looking at getting a guy like Bregman around pick 90?
I'm really not. I've never been a Bregman guy, and I don't really know why, because I know he's been really good. He's just, I don't know. I don't have a good answer for this. He's just always been a guy that I've kind of went away from. But with third base being the way it is, and it is, if people haven't drafted yet, it gets pretty weak in a hurry. So, I mean, if I got third base open and I don't need stolen bases, which I shouldn't at that part of the draft, I mean, we always need stolen bases, but I should be comfortable in stolen bases. I mean, I have no problem taking him there. The wrist issue does concern me a little bit, but, you know, we're in November, so he's got plenty of time to heal up and get ready for spring training and for the season. So, yeah, I got no problem with there. He's definitely worth that price tag as opposed to where he was going, I feel like, a couple years ago when he was going, thinking like the second, third round.
Yeah, he's going early, going very early. He feels like a guy that spring training rolls around and he has like a good first week or so, that ADP is going to go through the roof. Because I think people start going, oh, wow, he's back. Okay. And I think that's when we start seeing that like fourth round, Alex Bregman. And this is one of the, this could be one of those guys where you look back going, this is why I draft early. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. This is why. Yeah,
And he's a perfect target right now because we've seen what he can do. So, like, if you're drafting early, like, he's a perfect target right now at his at where he's, his current ADP is.
We talked about how deep starting pitching is, and it's kind of that way through most of the draft. Like, when you go past ADP 100, there's just a ton of outfielders that start to show up, like, that you can pick through your drafts, like, just off the top of your head. Is there, like, certain sections of the draft where there's, like, pockets where positions really – are like you can wait and get a bunch of them in this part of the draft, or you can do this or that. Like, I think you know what I'm saying, but is there like certain positions or certain parts of draft where you find it maybe easier to attack certain parts of your roster?
Yeah, that's a good question. I really like the pitchers, that where they're going right now. Like, you know, I was able to get, you know, Alek Manoah in the sixth round. I really like that a lot. There's loads of pitchers that I actually like in sixth through like 10th round. You're looking at Shane McClanahan. I'm a big fan of him. Trevor Rogers, Dylan Cease, Pablo Lopez. Like, sign me up for these guys. Like, this is like, that's the area where I like to hit my 3, 4, 5 starters. As you know, as long as I've gotten what my draft strategy, I usually like to get two aces early. So if I can wait till like, you know, 7, 8, 9, right in there in the 7th, 8th, 9th rounds to load up on my 3, 4, 5 pitchers. That's like perfectly ideal for me.
Yeah, no, that's kind of where I was doing it in my earlier draft is get the early ones. But to me, it was like, okay, I can keep taking pitchers, but because there's so many good ones right here. And then, you know, for the last like 30 rounds, not have to really worry about a whole lot and just start filling in with guys. Or I can go take more bats and then just fill in with like 4th and 5th starters later. It's the conundrum that I was trying to tell myself, let's get like top 3 pitchers in rotations now, instead of worrying about these guys later, like, you know, the Brady Singers of the world and stuff, who they're actually better this year, but you know, like last year, that's what you were doing and praying it would work. And that's kind of the different lineup builds you get. Cause I know some guys that'll just, you know, get this. And then the last like 20 picks is I want all pitchers, relief pitchers, starting pitchers. And it works for them because it gets you your innings. It's the beauty of these longer drafts to find different ways to build those rosters. Like talking to Ryan last episode, it was how many relievers do you try to leave a draft with? How many of this do you like? Rob DiPietro, he's one DC, obviously the overall, and he's mentioned outfielders. Don't sleep on outfielders because you need to start 5 of them. And like, it's very, very vital to have that. And at first, the newbie I was a couple years ago in these, I didn't think about that because I'm just used to redrafts. Like, we're good.
And some get hurt.
You're just like, oh, that makes sense.
Yeah. That's the thing about outfield. Everybody's like, oh, there's so many outfielders, but when you start 5 and you have 15 teams, like it can dry up in a hurry. Yeah, and there's a couple other pitchers I actually forgot to mention too that I really like a lot, like Chris Bassitt, Tyler Mahle, and Logan Gilbert. Like those are also perfect examples of guys that I like in 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th rounds. You can get them in, and it's the starting pitchers are plentiful right in those rounds.
Yeah, there's between like the top 150 or top 200 picks total. So between rounds 10 and 15 or whatever in a 15 teamer, you can have it one heck of a rotation like mapped out for you. It just depends on when did you take relievers? Did you wait on relievers? That's always a fun one. And then how do your bats look? But you can make it all work out for sure as you build it all out. Before we get into listener questions here, I have a question for you because I've seen something that people watch on YouTube. You can see this too. What's your favorite High Noon flavor?
Ooh, that's tough.
And I haven't had a lot of the new ones. I've been seeing a lot of the new ones. I haven't had them. But I'm still kind of like the, you know, like 8 or so. So
yeah, like there's 7 flavors. There's actually 8 flavors, but 7 you can get 7 in the 4 packs individuals. But yeah, there's passion fruit that's in the tropical variety pack right now. Yeah. My favorite, I would have to go with probably grapefruit or pineapple.
We're like on the same wavelength there. Grapefruit,
yeah.
Pineapple.
Yeah, those two are definitely right up there. There is one flavor that I really don't like, but what's crazy is it's the flavor that I saw the most of. It's black cherry.
Yeah. We have the same fucking thing. It's like, it's not that
good. You're the first person that's told me that you don't like it. And I don't, although my wife doesn't like it either. But
yeah, my wife and I don't like it at all. All my
friends love it. And I'm like, I just can't do it. I don't want to rip my own product that I sell. But yeah, no, it's the one flavor I can't do.
Because now Costco sells the four pack, like the four variety, like 16 packs, whatever it is. And it's lime, grapefruit, pineapple, and black cherry. Well, the four black cherries in each one gets given out to friends. And then, it's watermelon, not lime. My wife loves the watermelon. I love the grapefruit. We share the pineapple. That's how it always works. And I hate pineapple but most things of life, but someone gave me a pineapple of those on a hot summer day. And my goodness. Just beautiful. And for listeners, I never ever thought I'd be a seltzer person. I don't categorize these as seltzers, though. That's one thing I'll say is, you know, the White Claws of the world and stuff, they're super fizzy and all this stuff. You don't even notice that in the noon. Like, they're smooth and just beautiful. They're so well done.
Yeah, the High Noon, it's vodka-based, made with real fruit juice.
Real fruit.
Whereas, like, and I don't want to rip anybody else's products, but most of the other seltzers out there.
I'll do it for you.
Malt-based and artificially
and flavored. And hangovers in a can.
Yeah, so that's the difference. But, yeah, if you don't want to call it a seltzer, you can call it a canned cocktail.
Canned cocktail. There you go. Look, he's a salesman, folks. He's a salesman. Yeah, no, a good friend of mine, his good friend's wife works for a company that makes them. So every time he visits them, he comes back with paraphernalia and all kinds of stuff. And, it's a beautiful, beautiful thing, the High Noon company. Yeah. So great product. And hopefully it keeps growing and growing and growing. It'll be amazing because slowly but surely we're able to find it in more and more places, which is nice, to say the least. All right, listener questions here. Dave McDonald, he has a lot of questions for you.
Yeah.
he's gonna put you on the spot, and you can plead the fifth on anything you want to plead the fifth on. He says, who are the best high-stakes players?
Well, I think, you know, you got to look at some of the NFBC Hall of Famers there, Lindy and, you know, Gecko, Steve Japinka, like those guys are – Casey Cha, obviously. Yeah. Those guys are probably, you know, probably the best out there. But there's some incredible good players. Dave's one of them. Vlad Sedler, Matt Modica. Like, yeah, those are – and obviously Phil is starting to, you know, the Phil's robot season is putting him right onto the – like, right
I'd honestly, the map. I'd honestly hate to be Phil this year because the expectations are through the roof. Like, he's going to have the worst season ever.
Yeah. For sure.
But I wouldn't mind counting my money and losing too. It's cool. So, who are some of the high stakes players that are very, very good that people might not know about?
That's a good question. I will give you one guy that I think is phenomenal. It's Dave's enemy, the Guilds.
He's really
good. Andrew Geller. Yeah. He's absolutely amazing. He's phenomenal in football and baseball. He's a really, really good player.
Yep, no doubt about that. Will you have triple digit leagues this year?
No, not even close.
How many did you have last year total?
I think I had like mid 30s last year.
That's it. It felt like you were always drafting.
I was always tweeting out trying to get people to get in so I could get it going.
People, though, they're not going to run it. Like, you'd have that every year having those nights. So then he says over under on 50 leagues with you and Zach in them both. That's got to be the under then.
Oh, yeah. Under.
Okay. Because you two are the main drafters of the world. Ryan Roof asks, why does John keep targeting the entire Houston center field triumvirate in all of the drafts I've done with him? And what happens if they sign Marte?
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, if they sign Marte, then it might not look good for me. But yeah, I've been taking a lot of Chaz McCormick, Siri, and who's the other guy there that just got hurt in the playoffs?
Oh, I know you're talking about.
Can't think of his name now all of a sudden.
I know, I'm blanking on it as well.
Myers.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, so I've been taking all three of them because I think one of them, I don't know which one, but I think one of them is going to break out. I would bank on Myers, but now with the injury, I don't know. But yeah, so I'm taking all three of them because I think one of them will run away with everyday job and have a breakout season.
Yeah, I liked Meyer's overall tools last year. He was really, really good. So, well, Siri, like, they all have their moments. So it'll be interesting to see. Mm-hmm. Hey, you put them all out there, you can, you know, mix and match them. See how it goes. Yeah. Joe, it's a good full. It's a good. Do you do a lot of stacking like that in your DCs?
No, not usually. Okay. Just in this instance, because I think because they got rid of Miles Straw, right? So they saw something. And then they got rid of, or they didn't get rid of him, but Michael Brantley is kind of like he's getting a little bit older. He's always kind of an injury risk. So I think there's going to be at least one outfield spot that opens up. But if they sign Marte, then obviously that could close up quickly. So yeah, I mean, you're getting these guys in the reserve rounds, and I think all three of them, I think one of them has an opportunity to break out, and they could be opportunity for trades mid-season. You know, these draft and holds, obviously you're drafting for the whole season. So if one of them gets traded and gets everyday playing time for the last couple months, then you're looking at, an everyday player and an opportunity to, you know, maybe he breaks out then.
Yeah, it's not bad to have everyday player options on some of the better teams in all of baseball as well. So that's a plus. You're not like loading up on, you know, the Orioles or something. So Joe McHugh asks, what is John's favorite cocktail?
I'm a vodka drinker, so probably just a vodka lemonade. I'd be happy. Just nice and simple. Being a liquor salesman, you'd think I'd drink a lot of things, but I really don't. I'm very, I drink a lot of quantity.
Quantity over quality sometimes. No, and, yeah. And you probably get the good vodkas too, potentially. So you don't have to worry about the, you know, Popov and stuff like that. So that's always good.
yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm just a vodka drinker. I'm not much of a whiskey drinker. Brandy's huge here in Wisconsin, but I don't drink much brandy. Yes, it
is. My goodness.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I don't touch brandy either, but my God, what you guys do there in Wisconsin. It's a freaking pastime. It's Jameson. Yeah.
It's our staple here. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
What's your vodka of choice?
I really don't have a favorite.
Whatever's vodka available.
Yeah. I'm good with whatever, really. Gotcha. I mean, the vodka I sell the most of is New Amsterdam. So I'll say that for business reasons.
That's probably one of the ones I have not tried yet. So that's interesting. It's always like Tito's or Goose or so, like I'll get the Costco vodka, which I believe is Goose now or something. I don't know. They have all different ones.
Kirkland probably.
Yeah, the Kirkland one. Yeah. Their stuff's great. So I'm fine with that. It's one of the big one of the big products in their bottle. It's all it is.
Yeah. The thing for me is I don't drink it straight. So I always like to mix it with something. So
yeah, no, I can't do it straight either. I did that when I was in college and we don't do that anymore. So that's just not allowed anymore in this household. If I want to stay married, and that's just how it's going to go. So we mix things. It's always fun chatting with you, John. I don't have any more listener questions, because I'm not going to ask you what kind of soap you prefer and stuff. These guys wanted to know, so we don't need to talk about that. But I always enjoy chatting it up with you. Any other fancy baseball takeaways right now, or any just anything? What do you got going on?
I'll just tell a quick story. So it's kind of what I've been preaching, my aces and bases strategy. I did it last year in the Super DC. I started off with pocket aces. I went Bieber, Bueller. My third round pick was Whit Merrifield. And my fourth round pick was Aroldis Chapman. So I started off my first four rounds and I got 10 stolen bases total. Or I'm sorry, 10 home runs total. And I won the league in home runs and RBIs. Like it goes to show you, like it was just a little bit more confirmation, like for my belief in my strategy, that you really can get power later. Like it's plentiful throughout the entire draft, whether it's a fab league or a draft and hold, you can get loads and loads of power later.
No, I agree with you on that one. No, I think that's a great point. Like it's the category that you can find best in offense. I think that's the thing people like, the best way to put it, because stolen bases, sure, you can find it later, but those guys will crush your team, like,
yeah,
for the most part. But power guys, if they're getting power, they're scoring runs, they're driving guys in. So at worst, were they not stealing bags and maybe a bad batting average? But batting average sucks these days. So like there's not too many Adam Dunn's out there killing you. So I'm 100% with you. It's just last year, like I said, I just struck out on my guys. Like, you know, Christian Walker, I thought would hit me 25 homers, and he hit, what, six? I had a handful of guys do stuff like that, and that just that crushed me all on the same team. But yeah, I'm with you 100%.
He was terrible. He was terrible. I did have him on a couple leagues as well.
He's going so late. He seemed like a great late power source, and it just didn't.
Yeah, that's what I thought too. When he was middle of the lineup, he's going to have an everyday role. Like, yeah, it just didn't work out.
Yes, we'll have to see the more we dig in the drafts and see who stands out and see how those change and all that kind of fun stuff. But, John, appreciate you joining me. We're going to wrap it up there, and we'll have to do it again this draft season and see where things are ironed out here in about a month or so.
Sounds good, Bubba. Thanks for having me on. It's always a pleasure.
No problem, everybody. Make sure you check out John on Twitter at Pile of Dial. He's a great follow, great drafting all the time. He's a great source of knowledge and an NFBC just stud. So make sure you check him out and get all the goods from him. He was just on Rob DiPietro's podcast. He'll probably be making some more rounds along the way. So check all the good stuff out there, and we'll wrap it up with Bench with Bubba, episode 416. Catch you guys later.
Life's better with a home policy from American Family Insurance, because you'll feel protected no matter how the wind blows. Also, you can keep enjoying the home of your dreams. And our expert agents can help you save up to 23% when you bundle home with auto. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.